It's an L. What about this? What's this? O? Psych? It's a number. What about this one? This one hat, like, come on. A P. You're all wrong. Fine. It's a sideways smiley face. Fine. It's a, whatever. There are things in this world that, depending on how you see them, depending on your perspective, could be something different than what you think. If I put a 9 on the floor facing you, you're all like, oh, that's a 9. And then I go, no, it's not. It's a 6. What are you talking about? Because you have a different perspective than I do. And so how do we see other people's perspectives? How do we know that we're right and I'm right, this is a 6, you're wrong, it's not a 9. How do we begin the process of going, okay, well, can I put myself in your shoes? Can I change my perspective? Can I see things through your eyes? Because that's actually a really mature thing to do, to try and put yourself in another person's place to see that from their perspective. And what might start to happen when we do this is we might have to admit, hey, I'm wrong. I thought this was a 9, or I thought this was a 6, but now that I come around to your side, I see what it is. I was wrong. And sometimes you might see it from other people's perspective and go, no, I think I still come to the same conclusion. And so now the thing is, how do I gently have this disagreement and help this other person see that maybe they have it wrong? But the posture in all of this matters. How we begin to see through other people's perspectives, how we invite them to see through our perspectives, it requires a posture of humility. It requires us to be teachable. It requires us being willing to admit that we're wrong. And for us to be curious. There's a lyric from a song that goes, what if we get to heaven and we realize that we're both wrong? It's this idea of what if I'm so stuck in my ways, I'm not willing to give an inch, you're wrong, I'm right, and then I get to heaven and realize, oh, actually. Now, that doesn't mean that you always have to agree with someone. Sometimes we will have disagreements. We won't see things from the same perspective, even if we try to. So how do we disagree with others? Well, even when we disagree with someone, we must do it in a way that loves and honors them. Love must flavor everything that we do. Ephesians 4:15 says, rather, speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in every way into him who is the head, into Christ. For us to just disagree, it must be with love. One way that we can show love is through kindness and gentleness. Which is a better way to do that? To say, you're wrong, I'm right. Or to say, hey, have you thought about it this way? Here's what I think. Can we talk about it? Which, on a side note, on top of being the kinder, gentler way to do it, the second way is actually the better way to convince somebody. Nobody likes to be told you're wrong, but this way invites them to figure it out for themselves. It invites them to be self-reflective and to really evaluate, yeah, what do I think? Being curious and asking questions is the best way to disagree with someone. It's the best way to put yourself in their perspective, to try to see the world the way they do. Why do you think that? Tell me more. What informed your views on this? Have you thought about it this way? And then from that place, it allows you to share your own perspective. Hey, can I share my thoughts with you? This is what's informing me. This is how I got to this conclusion. This is what I think about this thing. It's a non-aggressive, non-accusatory way for you to have a conversation with somebody about something that you disagree on. It's a way to love the other person and see them as valuable. Because the truth is, doesn't matter if you disagree, that person was still created in the image of God, is worthy of love and value, and we should treat them that way. God loves them, so should we. Now, you might be like, all right, Matthew, why are we talking about disagreements? I thought we were talking about our series. Can I ask that? And we are. But I think this is a really important place for us to start, because what we're talking about tonight, a lot of Christians disagree on. And so how do we disagree on things together with love is a really important place for us to practice tonight. What we're talking about is creation and evolution, faith and science. Our question tonight, can I be a Christian and believe in evolution? Short answer, yes. Oh, that was easy. Small groups? Let's talk about it. I appreciate the one chuckle. Before we jump into this question, I think we actually need to back up and start with another question. Is science and faith able to coexist? Do both of these work together? Is science against God? Because I think the narrative that's out there for some people is that because science exists, I no longer need God. He doesn't exist. Or the opposite is true. Because God exists, I don't need science. But the truth is, science actually helps us know more about God. Some of the earliest scientists were Christians who had a belief that there was a rational God who created the universe. And the only, not the only way, but one of the ways to know more about him was to study what creation was. I want to read this excerpt from a book called 10 Questions Every Teen Should Ask About Christianity. This chapter is specifically about our topic tonight. This is what it says. But the first scientists believed there were consistent laws running through the universe, because they believed that there was a consistent law-giving God. They believed from the Bible that there was only one God who created the universe in an orderly way, and that he was the kind of God who didn't change his mind. So they guessed that he'd make the universe according to laws that would work the same all over the world and wouldn't change over time. If there were lots of gods, you might expect to find different rules in different places, a bit like different countries having different laws. And you might expect the rules to change depending on which god was in charge in that place or at that time. But if there was only one God over the whole world who has always been in charge and will always be in charge, you would expect the laws to be the same in every place and at every time. The first scientist also knew from the Bible that God is completely free. No one tells God what to do. So the only way to find out what laws God put in place was to go and look at creation. So science isn't against God. It actually helps us know him more. It's like the Psalms say, the heavens declare the glory of God. This was true, actually, for an author. His name is Lee Strobel. Lee started out his journey as an atheist, somebody who didn't believe that there was a God at all. And he started digging into Christianity, and he set out actually to disprove it. He wanted to find evidence that it's not true. And so he started digging in, and he wrote two books. The first was called The Case for Christ, and the other was called The Case for the Creator. And what he found was that for him, when he looks at the universe and at the laws of nature, he finds that belief that all of this came from nothing feels like more of a leap of faith than believing that there's a God. I think we have a quote from him. Yeah, I realized that it would require more faith for me to maintain my atheism than to become a Christian. And so that was the moment for him that he's like, yeah, to him, there has to be a God. And I want to know him. And I'm sure many of you have heard it said that Christians can't believe in God and believe in evolution. So we're going to talk more about that tonight. Because if faith and science can cooperate, then maybe there's a way for these two things to cooperate too. Before we jump in, I want to say this, though, that some of you might in this room might already believe that God created everything. Some of you might not be sure. And some of you might not believe that at all. And that's okay. I'm glad you're here. This is the place where you can ask those questions. What I want to do tonight is show you what the Bible says about God as creator and how Christians have wrestled with the question of how he created and how we can answer our question, can Christians believe in evolution? So before we go any further, I think we need to make sure that we all understand what we're talking about here. Sometimes this gets framed as creation versus evolution, but that can be a little bit misleading. As Christians, we believe in creation, that God is the creator of everything. The real question for Christians is not if God created, but how he created. Let's start looking at what evolution is. Now, just from my context, middle school, have you talked about evolution yet? Raise your hand. A few of you? Okay, most of you. Okay, great. High school, I'm assuming you already did. Now, I'm going to give a really quick overview, an oversimplified overview of what evolution is. My degree was not in science. I haven't picked up a science textbook in over 10 years. So if it's wrong, please forgive me. But evolution is this idea that life changes and develops over time. It's this idea that all living things were connected at some point way back in the past and that we've developed through generations of changes that over millions of years that life went from a simple life form and has become more complex over time. It is important to note that evolution is not trying to explain trying to explain how life got to where we are today, not necessarily explaining the why it exists or who creates it. And then we have Genesis 1, which tells us that God is the one who created everything, that he speaks and creation listens, and he calls it good. I'm going to read for you some parts of Genesis 1. We're not going to read the whole thing together, but I'm going to read each time that God creates. And it for Genesis 1, it's split up into six different days. Listen to this. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And God said, "Let there be light." And there was light. And God said, "Let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters, and let it separate the waters from the waters." It's this idea that the oceans are created and separated from the sky. And God said, "Let the waters under the heavens be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear." And God said, "Let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from the night." He's creating the sun, moon, and stars. And God said, "Let the waters swarm with swarms of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the expanse of heavens." He's creating fish and birds. And then on day six, God said, "Let the earth bring forth living creatures according to their kinds." This is where the disagreement comes in. When Christians read Genesis 1, some understand it to mean six literal 24-hour days. Others understand those days as expressing longer periods of time. It's this idea that a day can, yes, mean a day tomorrow. It can also mean back in my day as a period of time. They go to places like Psalm 90, verse 4, that says, 1,000 years is like a day to the Lord. So they see these days as being longer periods of time. And still others would believe that God may have used something like evolution to bring about creation. That's how he created, or part of it, at least. And so the disagreement is not really about whether God created, it is about how to understand the timeline and the process. And I'm going to be honest with you, this is a really complex conversation. There are a lot of different views, and each one has people who love Jesus, who love the Bible, and land in different spots. Really smart people, people way smarter than me, believe different things about the how of how things were created. And so how do we know which one is the right answer? And the honest answer is, I don't think we can know beyond a shadow of a doubt this side of heaven the how. And I know that can feel unsatisfying for a lot of you. So I want to show you something. Something that was really formative for me as I was going through my own journey of coming to understand how creation was, how it happened. It's from a movie called Noah. Noah is the story of Noah and the Ark. And I'm going to give a huge disclaimer. One, it's just not a great movie. Two, it is not a place for biblical truth. They take a lot of creative license that is not in the Bible. So I am not telling you to go to this movie to understand what the Bible is saying. That is not what I'm showing you. And it offered something for me that made me go, huh, maybe what I've been seeing as a 9 is actually a 6. So context for the clip. Noah and his family are on the ark during the flood, and they're sitting around, and Noah's telling them a story. Last week when we were talking about Can I Trust the Bible, Amanda talked about this idea that before we had the printing press, before we had books, how they would pass on truth, would they'd sit around and tell stories. That's what's happening in this clip. Let's check it out.
Let me tell you a story. The first story my father told me and the first story that I told each of you. In the beginning, there was nothing. Nothing but the silence of an infinite darkness. But the breath of the Creator fluttered against the face of the void, whispering, "Let there be light." And light was. And it was good. The first day. And then the formless light began to take on substance and shape. Second day. And our world was born. Our beautiful, fragile home. And a great, warming light nurtured its days. And a lesser light ruled the nights. And there was evening. And morning. Another day. And the waters of the world gathered together. And in their midst emerged dry land. Another day passed. And the ground put forth the growing things, a thick blanket of green stretching across all creation. And the waters, too, teemed with life. Great creatures of the deep that are no more. Vast multitudes of fish, some of which may still swim beneath these seas. And soon, the sky was streaming with birds. And there was evening. And there was morning. A fifth day. Now the whole world was full of living beings. Everything that creeps, everything that crawls, and every beast that walks upon the ground. And it was good. It was all good. There was light, and air, and water, and soil, all clean and unspoiled. No plants, and fish, and fowl, and beast, each after their own kind, all part of the greater whole, all in their place, and all was in balance. It was paradise, the jewel in the Creator's palm. And the Creator made man, and by his side woman, father and mother of us all.
Now again, I want to be clear. I am not telling you that this is how it happened. I'm not telling you to go to a movie to find biblical truth. What I am saying is that for my own journey, this opened up a door that helped me see things from a different perspective. It helped me go, oh yeah, what if it was just sped up really fast? Like, what if it was a time lapse? That things were created in 6 literal days, but God could do that, right? God's God. And so it sent me down this path of like, okay, I want to know more about what Genesis is saying. Let me see what Genesis 1, 2, and 3 is telling me about how God created the world. And so I started digging in and I started studying. And what I found is that while the how is important, sometimes our debates can cloud what God is really trying to tell us. I want you to listen to this part because this is the most important thing. See, I think the main purpose of Genesis 1 is not actually to tell us the scientific explanation for how our world was made. It isn't primarily trying to tell us how. Instead, it's telling us who and why. The main goal is to describe the relationship between God, creation, and humans. In Genesis 1, we learned that God is present and active and involved in creation. That God is the one who creates, he speaks, creation listens, and he calls it good. And then we get to the most important verse in Genesis 1, verse 27. So God created man in his own image, and in the image of God he created them. Male and female he created them. God created humans in his own image. And we have a special place in creation. And we don't just have a special place, but it goes on to say this. And God blessed them. And God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it. And have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over every living thing that moves on the earth. Because we bear his image, we are given a role in creation to participate with God in ruling over it. We get to participate in representing God to creation and representing creation back to God. These are the core truths of what the Bible tells us that I want us to hold on to. That no matter what you believe about the how, we can agree on this, that God created. The time frame in some ways doesn't matter. If a day is 24 hours or 1,000 years, God is still the one who created it. He is the one who caused all things to be, and that humans have a special place, a special relationship with him. No, I don't want you to hear this and think, oh, so it doesn't matter what I believe. It does. Truth matters. How we understand God and his word matters. But what I am saying is this, that Christians can wrestle with the how. That's okay. But don't miss the bigger picture. The Bible is making it clear who created you and why you exist. And I want us to hold tightly to those things that we want to hold tightly to it, and things that we can hold a little bit more loosely, we can be a little bit more humble with, the things that we're still trying to understand. At the end of the day, here's what I want you to hold on to. God created, which means you are not an accident. You were created on purpose and in his image. You have value, not because of what you do, but because of who created you. And you weren't just created, you were created for relationship. God knows you. God invites you to walk with him. And you have a purpose in this world, to represent him, to reflect him, to participate in what he is doing. So yes, we can wrestle with the how. You can be a Christian and believe in evolution, or in 6 days, or in the wide range of other thoughts, thoughtful views that are in between those two. Really smart people who love Jesus, who trust the Bible, come to different conclusions on that. But don't miss the bigger picture. Genesis 1 is not primarily telling us how. Instead, it's telling us who and why. The same God who created everything created you and wants a relationship with you. Would you pray with me? God, you are creator. You are good, and you made us to be in relationship with you. You created this whole universe around us. You designed it intricately and purposefully. And you put us in a special place. You created us in your image, and we're humbled by that. I'm humbled by that, that you would want to press into relationship with us. Would you show us how to live that out? Would you show us what it looks like to be your image bearers? Would you dwell with us richly, to walk with us, to show us how to reflect you to creation and how to be in relationship with you back? As we go to small groups, would your spirit be with us? Would you bring us to your truth? Would we be united in the truth that you created us, that we are yours? We ask this in your name. Amen. Head to small groups.